more under the breach, dear friend.
Well, squeeze the wall up with our English dead.
And here we are, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, with another really exciting episode of The Personal Wealth Coach, starring Jeff and
Jake
McClure. That was a strange noise you just made there, Mr. McClure.
Yes.
And we're going to make some strange noises while we're in here today, because we have a new board that looks like it was manufactured sometime in the 20th century.
Which is maybe even the
early 21st century, which is massively changed.
It isn't run off of sperm whale oil anymore.
Yeah, I think we've graduated to kerosene, haven't we?
They took all the tube out, and I think there's some digital stuff going on in here.
What did you do with the old board?
I think it was shipped directly to the Smithsonian.
Was it? It's something. Okay, yeah. Well, because I mean, this thing was the board we had in here before, which only worked part way, and there were knobs that sometimes when you turn them, you just get a lot of static, but nothing else would happen.
60% of the time, it worked every time.
Yes, but it was such a beautiful classic board. It was the same. It was an identical board to the one I used in 1965. Think about that just a moment, okay? That was 35, 40, it was, you know, like half a century ago, I used a board that was identical to that one, but the one I used half a century ago was clean, whereas this one was
very dirty.
Actually, it was darkened in places from skin oil of having half a century of use. Let's put it like this. I saw a picture of Lynn Woolley as a young man, which all by itself is frightening. And a very young man, and he was sitting, grinning at this, sitting in front of a microphone and a control board, and it was exactly the same control board that we were using. And Lynn's not young anymore. Anyway, so this is the Personal Wealth Coach, and we're supposed to give a disclosure at this point, which is really awkward given that there's a strong wind blowing out of the north. But today is Saturday, November 21st. Got to tell you that. That's the first disclosure.
11/21.
Yeah. 1/1/21.
Yep.
But
I didn't mean to stop you with restating the date.
It really struck me because tomorrow is 11/22.
That you're right in that 21 comes before 22.
But that's a very significant date, and I asked a couple of people in the office yesterday, does November 22nd mean anything to you? Is it a special day of any kind? And they looked at me and said, well, it's 1/1/22. I mean, it's nothing special about it.
Yeah. It's a generational thing.
Is it something to you?
Yeah.
Okay, is it something to you? I'm asking the guy who's
in
here.
It's a generational thing.
Does 11/22 mean anything to you, November 22nd? See, no. For those of you who are our age, my age, November 22nd, 1963 is the equivalent of 9/11. And we knew exactly what that meant. That's when John F. Kennedy was assassinated.
I watched,
and we plunged into the Vietnam War, and the whole world turned upside down.
I watched a movie last night with my wife, When Harry Met Sally.
Mm-hmm.
It's one of those weird ones. I've never seen the movie, and everyone quotes it. It's like Casablanca now. Well, in the movie, they watch Casablanca as if people today watch When Harry Met Sally. But at one point, Billy Crystal, who's the lead, is complaining about the girl that he's dating at the time, and he asks her, where were you when Kennedy was shot? And the answer came from her, when was Ted Kennedy shot? And watching it today, people don't even know who Ted Kennedy is.
Ted Kennedy?
Right.
Ted Kennedy was a shot.
Correct. That's why he was making fun of the girlfriend for thinking of Ted Kennedy and seeing. So there's a generational issue that happens over time. You get older.
It's like, where were you when Ted Kennedy...
I don't get older.
The bridge.
You get older. Right. Exactly.
Ted Kennedy ran off a bridge? Yes.
Yes, with a person in the car.
Who's Ted Kennedy is the question I got. I literally got that at the office. Who's Ted Kennedy?
You shouldn't be all that upset about that because Woodrow Wilson is not somebody most people recognize the name of, you know.
But he just got kicked out of... He's getting kicked out of Princeton, I understand.
Right,
despite
exactly.
the fact that he was the president of Princeton University for
his views
years.
Are not considered the common views of today anymore.
Obviously.
So.
So.
Generational issues are real.
Which means that Andrew Jackson should definitely be removed from U.S. currency.
For those of you Generation X and Millennials that are listening, 11...
Both of you.
Yes, both of you. 11 or... if you're listening.
No, there's one here and one here, so...
11/22 was the day that the John F. Kennedy was assassinated.
Yes, and the world changed.
Well, it didn't really, but
it
changed no more less from the other generations.
Well,
it's just part of ancient history for
December us. December 7th, 1941. Most people know what that was.
It's a day of infamy.
And November, the next generation had 11/22, November 22nd.
We have September 11th.
And you have 9/11. Now,
but most people that... this is funny because it's asked on late night talk shows, but other statistical study oriented people have asked the question, what year was the September 11th attack? And
1941.
Only about half of the people in the United States know what year
really?
The attack was. Yes. Yes. People have Google and they have smartphones, so they would actually know. They just have it in their pocket, not in their head.
If we have any reasonable number of people listening,
we don't.
then the use of Google just jumped.
Right.
You know?
Yes.
What year was it?
Right.
So you're gonna tell them?
What, September 11th? No,
yeah.
I'm not going to tell them.
That was not very
nice. If they want to know, they can look it up. I'm not going to waste my breath if half of them are going to forget it anyway.
And I will give them an answer that will cause them to have the wrong answer.
Oh, that would be lovely.
It was in the first year of the new millennium.
There you go. Now they're going to have the wrong answer for sure.
Which we made a big deal of at the time, and I'm sure nobody remembers that. The 2000 was not the first year of the new millennium.
No.
It was the end of the 20th century. That's why there's a 20 at the, 2000
yes.
starts with 20th. So the 20th century ended in 2000.
It's a very European way of looking at it in that they call the first floor of any building floor zero. And then the first floor is...
Okay, we're going to get a challenge here.
Well, we would consider floor two. Okay, so you...
If I press this button right here... Now, okay, we got a guy here. Okay, I'm going to press the button, and then I press that button, and I slide this up, and...
All right. Caller on 773-1400, you're a dial tone.
Dial tone, yes. Okay, well, we have a dial tone. Can we just leave those two pressed?
And then you can slide it forward.
Okay. This is really fascinating.
This is like trying to teach grandma email.
Yes, we walked in behind Ed Laughlin as he's walking out. We have to set up all our stuff, and then we look down, and then I look down, and the control board is completely different.
The control board glows in the dark, and
yes.
It has dials. It doesn't have dials anymore. It has sliders.
So how long was your instruction on this? The guy that's standing here, who's looking over my shoulder, who's supposed to assist.
It's 5 minutes. What, 1 minute?
1 minute?
Anybody
yeah, okay.
that's ever mixed sound can look at that and say, that's easy.
I don't mix sounds.
Yes, you do.
I try to keep them as pure as I can.
Well, that may be the issue.
My speakers on my computer, which is about, or my headphone, each have one volume control on them. Well, anyway, we did have a week, and I didn't do our disclosure. And the disclosure is that the Personal Wealth Coach is not only the name of this radio program, where the principals are Jeff and Jake McClure, it is also the name of an investment advisory firm registered with the United States Securities Exchange Commission. And it's located, the firm, not the Securities and Exchange Commission, the firm is located in Salado. And Salado, Texas. And it has the same principles as the radio show. Our program, and that's not coincident. It is a coincidence. It is coincident, but it's not a coincidence, which is really peculiar. It is because we're affiliated, which makes no sense at all whatsoever. But it's a coincident. It's an affiliation that is coincident, but not a coincidence.
You've just cleared the whole thing up completely. Clear as mud.
It's as least as it is far better than the thing you hear at the end of the commercials. Goes.
Right. You just need to have a speed knob on your nose or something. You can turn that as you speak.
Even if you say, by the way, if you ever hear those things at the end of the medicine commercials or the car sales commercials or insurance commercials or whatever.
Insurance or investment commercials particularly. Just take everything that happens before the half a minute of really, really high speed talking and ignore it.
Well, basically,
because that's what all the words into high speed are saying to do.
And if you actually listen to it slowly or had to write it, which I have had to do on several occasions, you realize it doesn't make any more sense slowly than it does.
Right. The words that preceded the words that are spoken now may or may not have had any validity in reality. When you say that really quickly, that's a normal disclosure.
Yes.
No, it's not.
And what I love, have you ever watched one of the, and I don't watch TV very often, thank God, but have you ever seen one of the prescription medicine commercials on television?
Oh, yeah.
And noted and heard and seen the disclosure afterwards?
Yeah, well, you've got these people running through the sunlight with smiles on their faces as they talk about their medical problems, and they're dancing through the grass, yes, and then at the end of it, it starts
talking
about...
While they're going through there,
right.
Possible side effects include sudden death.
Right. The people are doing these...
Sudden death,
these,
cancer,
these
head,
graceful,
head falling off,
graceful,
running feet.
Beautiful running through... the grass and
anal leakage.
Not good things
there was
happening.
This happened a long time ago. There was a complete expose on this, on the expose.
Mm. They were exposing the expose.
Yes, I love it. Ronald Reagan was president, and he had just...
When was that?
...signed a bill restricting the rights of unions to organize. Okay?
They weren't that organized to begin with.
To go into factories, basically.
Right. Yeah.
He just...
Disorganized unions. Right.
And that evening, they'd scheduled him very carefully. He was going into a bar full of hard-headed workers.
Hard-headed or hard-hatted?
Hard-hatted.
Okay.
Both,
maybe
probably.
Both. Yeah.
And...
I think OSHA doesn't require
a
hard hat.
With a hard hat on. Slapping backs, and they were slapping his and shaking hands, and they were all very, very happy to see him. While in the background, I mean, the whole point is that verbally, during the day, the news had come out that he had union bashed.
Right.
Horribly. But the photo op that evening was of him... going into this bar with a bunch of hard-headed workers and him wearing a hard hat and everybody slapping backs and shaking hands. And so among union members, his popularity jumped the next day.
Of course.
Then Diane Sawyer,
uh-huh,
on CBS, I think it was at the time, maybe NBC, but I think it was CBS, came on and did an expose of how the Reagan administration was shaping the perceptions of Ronald Reagan by doing this. And so while you see in the background him behind her...
Because that's unusual, yes.
In the background, you see him with back slapping and so on in the bar. She's telling what actually happened.
And it still causes people to think more highly of President Reagan because he's back slapping
right,
and so on in the scene.
Right. Very widely watched news segment expose. And I read an expose on the expose later, or a commentary on the expose later.
A news about the news?
Yes.
No way.
And they said polls taken of people who watched, it was on 60 Minutes. Polls taken who watched, of union members who watched that segment, showed a 7% increase in popularity for Ronald Reagan.
That makes sense.
Because what they saw completely trumped what they heard.
That's behavioral economics, and people that have been listening for very long to this program understand that that's my area of study, and that behavior
It is not your area alone, though.
No, it isn't.
I mean, it doesn't, like, belong to you. It's a possessive.
No, I own it. And that's my behavioral part of the behavioral
economics. You need to run for president with an accent like that.
I'm going to change the subject a little bit.
Oh.
More than a little bit.
To protect the innocent?
No, just to change the subject. Okay. As far as I'm concerned.
Do you realize that is a...
Just the facts, sir. Just the facts.
That is a very dated thing. I used that the other day, and some of the people in the office looked at me like, huh? That's actually from Dragnet.
Yes. All right, so...
And most people don't know what Dragnet is, so that's okay.
I'm changing the subject. It's a drastic change. It isn't a little change.
This is an unsegued segue.
So get your neck braces ready for whiplash.
Whiplash.
Changing the subject to Alaska.
You will?
Yes, Alaska. I'll ask you a question, and you'll answer.
Okay, right.
No, Alaska, the state. They're going through a little bit of a budgetary crisis right now.
Really?
Yeah. Alaska is...
The price of oil has dropped 60%.
Production is down and oil prices are down. And
both?
Yes, both in Alaska because the fracking has been at a rate that they can do it all year round instead of only in the years, in the 3 months that are not frozen solid in Alaska. So oil production in Alaska is... way down. Their peak year was in 1989, and they're down.
Wait a minute, are you sure 1989 happened?
According to the books.
Okay.
According to the books. So they are now at about one quarter of the oil production that they were in 1989, and the price of oil.
And Ronald Reagan was president in 1989.
Right. Well, no, 1988 was his last year.
Okay.
He was elected in 80. So he was elected in 79.
So it would have been George H.W. Bush. Okay, go ahead. Yeah. Yes.
So looking at that, there's a peculiarity about Alaska.
A peculiarity.
Yeah, right. that's a peculiar way of saying peculiarity.
Yes, right.
Alaska doesn't have a state income tax and does not have a state sales tax.
Right.
And... It pays, last year, it
you
paid...
You have Sarah Palin as its governor.
Every citizen of Alaska got a check from the state of $2,072 last year.
Ooh, yeah, that's cool.
This year, they're trying to figure out how they're going to make the budget work, because the 90% of their revenue at the state level came from taxing oil.
Mm-hmm.
Now, they still get a pretty good number of billions of dollars... compared to the population of Alaska, that more than enough to pay for their schools and so on, both of them. But they're now talking about lowering that dividend payment to much uproar across Alaska. It's very similar to what's going on in Saudi Arabia right now, where just living there caused you to get money, and people expect the money, and the idea of actually having to pay money to have roads instead of having oil companies pay to have roads is foreign. It is one of those strange situations that you wouldn't expect to see in the United States, but exists here, in that Alaska is going to need probably to set up a taxation policy, and it's going to need to stop sending money to individuals. And it may not have to do it this year. Maybe they'll find enough ways of cutting to not have to do it this year.
But they will.
It may not do it next year. It may not even do it this decade.
But they've got to raise taxes.
This is something you spoke about in the newsletter that you wrote out by email, and that is that we are using less oil.
Mm-hmm.
And we've been using less oil since the early 80s. Per capita, we're using a lot less oil. Our cars are burning much less to go the same distance and longer. We're moving to more efficient, better ways of doing it, and we found a lot of oil, which means that as a source of revenue, it's going to lead to instability of governments that are dependent on that.
Dutch disease.
And if you doubt that it leads to instability, look what's going on in Syria, in Iraq, in Iran, in
Venezuela,
Saudi Arabia, all the places whose governments were treated the same way that Alaska's state government has been are in a state of anarchy,
mm-hmm.
or close to it, or extreme dictatorship to prevent anarchy.
We have a caller on 773-1400, and I hope you're on the air, caller. Go ahead.
Yeah, the cover story for The Economist this week is global debt. I guess the U.S. started it with QE 1, 2, and 3, and everybody else thought that was a great idea, so they started it too. Is this unique in our history, or have there been other times when all the other countries of the world have been in such debt, or maybe not?
Okay, now, hang on. Let me define the question just a little bit. You said it started with QE 3?
Well, you know, the printing press is what the...
We'll talk about that, but actually didn't. QE3
was a...
reduced the debt.
Right. QE3 was a no impact on public debt. It was flow-through.
Let's go to the other two. I'll hang up and listen.
All right. We do have a listener.
Prove it.
That may have been
pre-recorded.
No, he interacted with me. So
you may have had a script that I didn't know about.
Well, let me simply say, have we had other times in the world when the world has been in deep debt?
Yes.
Yeah, more of them than I know how to count. As far back as there is history, have periods of relatively high indebtedness around the world, than we have today.
Right. If you look at the wars between the Assyrians and the Egyptians, this is 2,500 B.C., somewhere right around there.
Just a few millennia ago.
No, it's not that far back.
Right.
You've got history for it. It was based on debt.
In geological or astrophysical time, it's relatively...
Debt over grain that the Egyptians had been selling at credit, but the credit was actually in different forms of currency, and in the middle of it, they decided to stop taking one form of currency, and the Assyrians insisted on paying for it in that currency, and then there was a big war, and changed the landscape of the world.
Mm. As far as the debt is concerned, we're in the third wave of a debt crisis, and the debt crisis actually began following the collapse of 2000.
Yeah.
2002. And if you want to put it in the middle of an administration, well, let's back up a step. During the Clinton administration...
Hold on, there's a wall in the way. I've got to move before I back up.
During the Clinton administration, we were actually paying down our national debt.
Well, now, let me throw something in. The reason why we were paying... Part of big reason is because of a recovery of a prior debt crisis.
You got to start someplace.
Yeah, the savings and loan issue and the...
Right.
So you got to start someplace. Growth on the money that was used to pay down debt before was coming back in during the Clinton administration.
But that one actually started under Bush and Reagan before it. Okay.
Yes.
And I'm going to tell you something here that you're not going to probably like, because I recognize the voice.
Oh, I don't like what you say most of the time. It's okay.
During the Ronald Reagan administration, we increased debt rather substantially.
Yes. Extremely so.
During the Clinton administration...
But we won a war doing it. It was a Cold War.
Yeah, we certainly did. I'm not saying that there's actually good reason for increasing debt at the right times.
Let's lay one piece of groundwork before we go forward. Please hold just a moment. Debt is not always bad. Take us at that. We'll go forward with it. But it's important to recognize that debt is not always bad.
Most of the people who listen to this live in houses.
Yes.
The ones that don't live in houses probably live in apartment buildings. Okay?
Right. And all of our currency.
And all of those buildings that you live in, I would venture to say none of them were built without incurring a very substantial debt.
Well, I would more than venture to say it. I will guarantee it. Even if people paid cash that they had.
But I mean,
the cash itself is debt. It's a Federal Reserve note. So there's debt involved from one end of the system to the other.
Even if the house was built when we were on silver certificates.
Right.
There was a mortgage used to build that house.
Right.
Or that apartment building or whatever. Debt for positive long-term capital purposes is almost universally a good thing. I say almost universally. There are exceptions to everything.
There are big exceptions.
But let me get back... Yeah. If I can, to the story, okay?
Yes, please do.
During the Reagan administration, the deficit went up rather substantially. The national debt went up rather substantially as a percentage of what was there before. During the Clinton administration, we reaped the benefit of the investments and the repairs done by those debts, including the during the Republican administration, a lot of banks were bailed out and rescued. And as a result, we ran up a lot of debt, but because we didn't collapse the economy, which we could have done if we'd not rescued them, we reaped a lot of interest and payback on that debt. During the Bush administration, and I'm not saying that the president was necessarily responsible for this. There's arguments both ways on that. But I'm just simply saying there's a pattern in history here. And the pattern in history is that when Republicans win the White House and the Congress, the debt runs up very dramatically. And when Democrats take over, it goes down equally dramatically. And this has occurred through most of the 20th century, certainly into the 21st century. There are exceptions to it, obviously. But that's generally the way that it has worked so far. And what we've got right now is a situation where we had a we ran two wars during the in the early 2000s. We ran two wars off the books without raising taxes
and not as part of a normal budget, right, and as extra part of the budget.
Right. And I want to emphasize something else here too. And I'm not trying to bash any party.
In fact, we agreed and were wholehearted supporters of both
right.
of those wars at the time.
But during the when the Republicans controlled Congress in the early 2000s, we got a Medicare addition that didn't have any taxes to support it, and we got a
prescription drug care
right,
benefit,
which is the most expensive
unfunded entitlement.
Well, it's actually theoretically the most expensive entitlement. Period.
Right.
And then we also did two wars without raising taxes and without putting them on the budget. We did this off the books so that because Republicans generally don't like to raise taxes, but they do like to spend money, so we ran up the deficit. Now, I know this is a reversal, but because you're asking the question at this point and because it's in The Economist at this point, the debt of the United States as a percentage of GDP and as an absolute chunk of money relative to the world has actually been shrinking for the last several years. Now, I know that sounds really crazy because the numbers get bigger, but our GDP has been growing faster than the debt. And when that happens, and the other thing that's happened is a lot of the money that was that the Federal Reserve did stuff with, and the complexities here, I've got a book by Ben Bernanke that's about 5 inches thick, that explains some of the complexities.
Right.
So I'm not going to try to go into this. A lot of that, and a lot of the things that the Treasury did under the Bush administration that ran the debt up into the stratosphere, are now paying us back with principal and interest.
Right.
And the government is turning a net profit on that debt. And so what when you see the debt wave, the third wave of the debt is now hitting. The first one hit the United States. We recovered from it. The second impact was in Europe, circulating around Greece, although Greece was just the noisy part of it. The rest of it is still there. And the Europeans have not figured out how to get out of it. The third wave in the last year has hit the developing countries, including China. China is the one that's shouldering a lot of debt right now.
Let me do some backpedaling here, not taking back what you've said, but to provide some of the rationale behind quantitative easing in general. If you look at the overall debt in the United States to GDP, I'm not talking about federal debt, I'm not talking about government debt, I mean all debt, I mean debt
right.
of citizens. During the run-up from 2000 to about 2009, the amount of debt was rising at a rate that we've only ever seen for about a three-year period in the 1980s, and that led to the savings and loan collapse. When banks loan to people that can't pay the loan, this is something I've said before, but it cannot be said enough. There are two groups at fault here. They're the people that sign for the loan that say they can pay it when they know they can't, and there's the bank that says, we will give you a loan knowing you can't pay it.
There's a third one.
In this case, the third one was the loan broker
No, that's not the one I'm referring to.
Who was right in the middle between the bank and the loan, the one receiving the loan, the debtor, that was saying, okay, just do it, it's okay. What was the third one you were going to say?
The regulators of the banking system, there have always been regulators. One of the reasons that this all occurs is because there's a philosophical position of Republicans of relaxing regulation on banks, which leads to a crisis, which leads to us having to bail them out.
In 1907, we had a very similar situation that we had in 2007. Very similar. J.P. Morgan, the person, not the bank, stepped in and bailed out a bunch of other banks and said, we need a Federal Reserve. That's when the Federal Reserve was created. Because what happened was J.P. Morgan dipped into his own personal pocket to bail out the United States.
Mm-hmm. Along with a consortium of other bankers.
What you should know about this, to be very, very clear, is he made a lot of money doing it. He made
absolutely,
we'll use the word, ginormous amount of money by bailing out the United States.
He became, as a result of bailing out the banking system, the richest man in the world for a while.
Right. When done properly, when the bailouts, and I'm using that term because that's what the media calls them, are done appropriately with good terms so that they are able to be paid back with profit, then the people that give the bailouts wind up making a lot of money, which is why Clinton was not running a deficit, because George H.W. Bush and Ronald Reagan set up the Resolution Trust Corporation to buy up a bunch of real estate that was underwater and sell it at a profit later.
Underwater real estate?
Well, it wasn't really floodplain. It was underwater in the sense that more debt was owed on it than the value of it at the time that they purchased it.
The United States government is the only entity I know of that makes a lot of money off of underwater real estate.
Exactly.
They sell, they sell leases. Yeah. Underwater in the Gulf of Mexico.
Right, it's great. It's, here you have a contract. Go out there, pay us money for underwater real estate.
That's it, right.
Yeah. So, okay, so
I'd like to lease some land on the bottom of the ocean in the Gulf of Mexico. Right.
When the government steps in, it's not the government in this case, the Federal Reserve steps in, they're doing the job that J.P. Morgan did in 1907, which, on the surface, if it was done in a non-crisis situation, would lead to absolute astronomical inflation. But in a crisis situation, it diverts deflation.
Now, wait a minute. Absolute astronomical inflation is a really good thing. In the galaxy.
In the galaxy.
In the universe.
We wouldn't be expanding. It wouldn't be good. So absolute astronomical inflation is a good thing, just not in our currency.
Just not in money. Right.
From an astrological point of view, it's great.
By the way, are you done with that one?
Not quite.
Okay, go ahead.
Okay, so what happened with QE1, QE2, and QE3? QE3 was kind of balancing the debt load. QE1 and 2 actually was the Federal Reserve buying a bunch of private debt off of people that owned it, people that owned U.S. government debt and owned mortgage-backed securities that were willing to sell that debt at a huge discount. So, say, in 2006... Jane Doe bought a bond that was mortgage-backed. She thought it was going to be ultra-secure because, the worst-case scenario, they're going to foreclose on the property. She'll get her money back. 2007 happened. Suddenly she realizes that not only does she not know which house mortgage she owns, nobody else does either. So it's going to be really hard to foreclose on that without a lot of work. She gets scared. The price of that debt goes from 100 to 20.
Don't forget the fact that she discovers that the mortgage paperwork was signed by a person who had been dead for 6 years.
Right, and the bank didn't have anyone. A robot signed it for the bank.
Yes.
So the next part is that the Federal Reserve went to her and said, I'm not going to give you 20 for it. I'm going to be generous, and I'm going to give you 40 for it. And she said, oh, please, take my asset. Of course, she doesn't know she's talking to the Federal Reserve. She only knows that she's selling at 40 what a moment ago was at 20. She takes the money. She then turns around and tries to pay off her own debt with that extra money. She still lost money. So that's what the printing press people are talking about. The difference between 20 and 40 is the printing press. And we have a call, but let me finish this one last time. The difference between the normal scenario and a crisis scenario is the difference between buying at 100, which is the normal price, and then the Federal Reserve stepping in and saying, I'm going to buy it at 120, or buying at 20, which is a really, really depressed price, or the Federal Reserve stepping in and buying at 40. There's still a shrinkage in the money supply there. They didn't replace as much money as was lost. However, now they're selling those debt packages back, and they made a big statement about selling them back. They're selling back to the United States citizenry, who are buying them at close to 105. So the Federal Reserve bought them at 40. They were worth 20. That's a bailout. Now they're selling them at 105. The Federal Reserve just made a lot of money. Okay, we've got a caller.
Okay, caller on 773-1400. I think you're on the air. Go ahead.
Morning. Darn, I forgot what I was going to ask you.
No, I'm
kidding. Hey, I'd like to get your opinion or thoughts on something I've never heard anybody else address. And you're talking about the national debt. Mm-hmm. And that's probably what it centers on. We put in a prescription program that was unfunded.
Mm-hmm.
Then we had two wars that was unfunded.
Right.
And
we wound up with a lot of debt. Nobody can figure out why.
Right. Yeah, it's all out of my pocket, too. And
not yet, it's not.
And here's your history buff, Dale. In 1946, World War II was over with, and we had the baby boom.
Right.
Here it is, almost 2016. That's 70 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
2 years or so of the baby boom, that snake in the, or egg and the snake, is already drawing their Social Security. There'll be more to come. Now, my question is, with this large national debt and the baby boom that is coming online now, they will die off in probably about 20 years. Where will we stand on the national debt then, and what will happen in our economy once that big egg in the snake is no longer
it's
there?
It's not actually a snake. It's a lump in the snake.
Entitlement programs.
Okay.
I think I've listened to what your response is. Thank you.
Thank you. That's
thanks for the call.
Very complex. And we can't answer that right now because we have to do commercials.
Yes.
Remember your question, and that's a good, very, 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 very good question. And The Economist did address that with a cover story in 2002, so we can talk about that. And I'm going to try to
get the commercials. All right, here we go.
We're going to see if this works. Okay, so you're listening to the Personal Wealth Coach, and if you'd like to call us on the other side, if this is Saturday, November 21st, 2015, 773-1400
or 1-866-597-1400.
And I hope we'll be back. More of the Personal Wealth Coach with Jeff and
Jake
McClure, and we're in here debating over which buttons we need to push to do what, which makes life far more interesting.
Far more interesting. We had a question before the commercial.
We had a commercial before the question.
Questionable commercial. All of those things. The question was, what's going on demographically? It's
yes.
Not what he said, but that's what my interpretation is.
Yeah, basically what you're asking is, you were talking about the Reagan's snake. I thought that was kind of funny.
The baby boom.
Actually, it is not a snake. It is the rabbit.
He said egg in the snake.
Egg in the snake.
Right, so the lump of the
snake. Oh, I thought he was saying Reagan's snake.
No, egg in the snake. Snake.
In the steak?
Yeah, so Reagan wasn't mentioned as far as I could tell. Egg in the snake. The lump going
yeah,
through
the
baby boom.
Yeah, the egg passing through the snake. There's a couple of things. First off, you said we have a really high debt. I'm going to argue with you on this just a little bit. Debt is relative, like anything else. If you look at the amount of money the typical American family owes today that is in good shape financially, excellent shape financially, far better off than the people in, let's use the 1930s, the average American family in the 1930s and the average American family today. Average American family today is so much better off financially than the ones in the middle of the 1930s. It just, okay. But the average American family in the 1930s had a far, far, far lower debt than the average American family today. So the quantity of debt that we have, measured in dollars or a whole lot of other ways, is not a measure of how much
whether it's good or bad. The issue is Dell Computer almost went bankrupt because they didn't have enough debt. And I can go into great detail on how that happened. I've studied it a lot. But the point is that the amount of debt we have today in the United States is not, the debt that we have at the federal level is not excessive.
Right. Well, no, let me stop in here for a second, because he mentioned Social Security.
Right.
Social Security is a big chunk of the debt. Medicare is a big chunk of the debt. People have paid into the system using their Medicare and Social Security taxes, their employment taxes.
Wait a minute. This is a political season.
Mm-hmm.
Using their hard-earned money.
Right. Hard-earned money. Right. You paid in, or the and if you worked for a corporation, they paid in money as well. If you're self-employed, you paid both ends.
Yeah, but the corporations don't have hard-earned money.
No,
only workers
have hard-earned money.
Right.
The corporations, they just found it on trees or something.
It's laying around on the ground.
It's just finding. Okay,
right.
So that money's gone into the system. It's been spent, because at the beginning of Social Security, there were a lot fewer retirees than there were workers. The beginning of Social Security, it was 37, I think, workers for every retiree. And if all 37 people are paying money into the system, that one retiree, if he got all the money or she got all the money, would be very wealthy.
Right.
Well, that's not what happened. They said, all right, this is the amount. We want to make this sustainable. This looks good going into the future. So what Congress did is they looked around in a very Congress-like fashion and said, there is no place for the United States government to store money. Because the United States government is the backer of the money. So if they're backing money that they're storing, it just takes it out of circulation. It never does anything. It's stuck in a vault somewhere, and that causes inflation later. So what do they do with it? They spent it, and they wrote themselves an IOU, a debt to themselves. They said, I spent this money, and at some point, we're going to need to pay that money out as Social Security and Medicare in a pension form to people as they retire. Okay, followed so far, I think that's fairly simple. We're spending all the money that people are putting away because the United States government really doesn't have a place where it can put money. Chinese buy U.S. government debt. The Germans buy U.S. government debt.
They store their money effectively in the United States economy.
Right. The United States government is, in effect, buying U.S. government debt when they write themselves an IOU, and they say, I'm going to pay myself a percentage interest rate. Now, if you did that to yourself, you could forgive it at any moment. The funny thing is that Congress can, too. All they have to do is pass a law that says, we don't owe ourselves the big lump sum. We're going to continue to pay the pension.
We already did that once. Did you know that?
Oh, yeah. There's been more than once that we've done that.
With Social Security.
Well,
a lot of people don't remember. It was called the Greenspan Commission.
Right. Right.
And what happened is you used to get full Social Security at 65.
Uh-huh.
And there was a lot of other things about Social Security that were different at the
and
time.
And now some people get it at 66, and some people get it at 67, some people get it at some increment of months in the middle.
And there was no trade-off. If you made so much money, you paid taxes on part of your Social Security. You just got it tax-free. So the issue is that when the commission got done, what they had was a situation where they said, we don't owe ourselves as much money as we used to, therefore, we're not going to go bankrupt.
And all they had to do that is say, these are the conditions that we are going to pay the money in. And they can do that again. They will do that again. It's an absolute certainty. Go ahead.
We got a caller. We're going to continue to answer this question. You may have to ride right over to the next hour to hear the rest of this answer.
It's not an easy answer.
Because it's whole books have been written on this, but we have a caller. Oops.
That's bumper
music.
That's
the wrong one. It's this one over here.
Right.
And I push this and this, and then go like that, and I think you're on the air. Nope, wrong one.
I think it's the one all the way on the right.
I think you're on the air right now.
Yeah, I don't think you're ever off the air.
Yeah, you've got a caller on 773-1400. You're on the air.
Okay. Hey, this is the same guy calling back about the question you're answering now. I didn't really make myself clear, and I'm sorry about that. My thought, or what I was asking, was your thoughts on the future.
Right.
We've got $20 trillion in debt right now. So say we're able to pay off $1 trillion a year.
We have 20,
adding a trillion.
Wait a minute, stop.
That'll take us 20 years to pay it off. And then we've got the baby boomers that'll be dead in 20 years.
Wait a minute. You need to stop just a second.
What are your assumptions at the beginning?
Where did you get $20 trillion of debt?
Well, are we $18 trillion in debt right now?
Well, yeah, okay.
$2 trillion.
That's it.
Yeah, okay. Because a trillion here, a trillion there, pretty soon you're talking about some real money.
You're right. More than I make this year.
Yeah.
$20 trillion in debt. Take us $1 trillion a year to pay it off. That's 20 years from now. 20 years from now, the baby boomers, this egg again, is gone. Do we enter a period of really large tax cuts, and do we enter a period of just super prosperity since the baby boomers entitlement age group is gone?
No.
And our national debt is paid off? What does it look like 20 years from now?
Years from now, my best guess, and to give you a really quick answer before the end of the hour, the United States will be the dominant power in the world. Our economy will be dominant throughout the globe. We will be busy bailing out the rest of the world and taking them over. How do you like that? No, I'm serious. I'm not saying this in a lighthearted fashion. 20 years is way too far in the future to make solid predictions, but I can simply say that if you look around the world today, there is one really, really, really healthy, large, developed socioeconomic system in the world, and the rest of them are struggling to figure out what they're going to do next.
We're
living in the middle of it.
Yeah. In order to really answer this, we do have to lay the groundwork of what the debt is, which is what we're trying to do. And then I think it's going to be next hour, but we're going to explain how debt gets paid. And then this kind of fits in nicely with that first question we were asked about QE3 and and about the cover of the Economist magazine about what are we doing with all the debt and the world debt and the global debt situation, what's going on with it.
But I will tell you that if everything that Donald Trump said, if he were elected president and he could do everything he said, everything I just said is wrong, we're going into a depression.
Yes.
if Donald Trump or Ben Carson get elected president of the United States, and they're able to do everything they have said in the last debate,
we're
going to a depression.
We're
going to
do it on the other end, too.
Okay.
Same's true for Bernie Sanders.
Bernie Sanders, too. Okay.
Bernie Sanders and Donald Trump, if either of them get elected, we're going to be in a depression.
Okay. Thanks, guys.
Okay. And thanks for calling. You are listening to the Personal Wealth Coach, and we're coasting out of time for the first hour. We do truly intend to come back a second hour today, if today is November 21st of 2015. If it's not, I don't know where we're going to be. But
it's hard to tell the future. Even though people ask us to, we may not be able to know where we're going to be in 5 minutes.
Yogi Berra had the best thing. The predictions are really, really hard, particularly when they're about the future.
And the other thing about it is he said the future is just not what it used to be.
Both of those are absolutely true. Absolutely true.
Okay.
And it's never different this time. And
but if you'd like to contact us off the air, because we're about to go on
break.
Make
a promissory statement?
You could leave a voicemail message for us locally at
947-1111.
You can reach that same voicemail at toll-free 800-914-7526. That's 800-914-PLAN. You can email us at jeff@tpwc.com or jake@tpwc.com. You can go to our webpage, thepersonalwealthcoach.com or tpwc.com. Listen to podcasts. Look at our ugly mugs. Sorry about that. See our beautiful staff. And until next hour, this has been The Personal Wealth Coach.
Truth. It's not just a word on your Fox News station. News Radio 1400 KTEM AM. Temple, Belton, Killeen, Fort Hood.